Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CJAM's Handy Link. You're listening to Handy Link on CJAM 99.1 FM, reaching high ground in Windsor, Detroit.
Hello and welcome to Handy Link, sponsored by the Italian Canadian Handy Capable Association. I'm your host, Cam Wells. First segment of our show, I'll be chatting with Kathy Ludwig. She'll be telling us about Cruisers basketball. So tell me a little bit about Cruisers basketball.
Well, Cruisers Sports is a nonprofit charitable organization that we run out of the Halton Peel area near Toronto. And we actually have sledge hockey, wheelchair basketball, track and field, bocce, and a multi-sport program for small children. So the wheelchair basketball program is just one component of that. And we have about 100, it's over 100 now, athletes that are playing one or more of the sports in our area.
So what sorts of modified equipment do you use for the athletes?
So for basketball, we have sports chairs that we've been able to fundraise for and that kind of thing. For sledge hockey, there's sledges, and then for the track and field, we do have racing wheelchairs, but we also have the throw platforms for that. And for bocce, we have some ramps and things like that. And the kids that come to multi-sport, they for the most part use their own wheelchairs, but we do have some small sports chairs that if they want to try a small sports chair, that they can do that.
So, how do you go about spreading the word about the work you do?
Well, it's interesting because we've been around for a very long time, about 30 years, but still people in our own region don't know us. So we do our best to advertise through the local parks and rec departments and the different municipalities that we serve, and also making the cities aware of who we are. We try to get some information out in the media, especially around, we have a big sledge hockey tournament that we host in November. So around that event, we try to get a lot of media involved. We have two track and field meets as well as that we host in the summer. And again, we try to get more media involvement in that to make sure that the word is getting out. I myself have been spent some time recently knocking on doors. At children's treatment centers and physiotherapy offices, orthotics places, things like that. And I know a lot of the other people have done the same thing in the different areas. So
in your time with Cruiser Sports, has there been any success moment that really stands out for you?
I think, I don't know about a moment, but there's been ongoing successes. So, I myself had a little wheelchair basketball program and the multi-sport program. 2008, we merged with Cruiser Sports to become part of that bigger program. And that certainly helped us because we were a non-charitable organization, or we were not a charitable organization. I mean, we were just kind of running on the shoestrings, and when we merged with Cruisers, then there's opportunities to, we got a grant from Toronto Raptors. We were able to really launch our basketball program and move more towards competitive. So for me, that was a big moment for me personally. But we've also had a lot of other successes where there's been like a, I know one young man who was, I think he was 12, 13 at the time, and his teacher actually got him involved with our basketball program, and the first thing he said when he came in is he didn't know there were other people like him in the world with disabilities. So that was a moment where just for him to understand that he's not alone, and just for him to understand that there's a place where he can play and he can be on an even playing field and talk to other people about issues that may be affecting him that he wants to talk about. We've also had, you know, young kids and adults that are purely in a recreational phase and having a great time and fit for life, but we've also had athletes go to the Paralympic Games in all of our sports, bocce, track and field, basketball, and sledge. So those are also moments, too, that we've had.
So when you mentioned Paralympic athletes and those who have achieved athletically, can you tell me a little bit about the training practices they engage in?
when they're training, you know, for at that level, they're definitely training, like I know, 5 days a week in one case. 5 days a week, gym and ice time for the sledge team. And then on weekends, there may be training camps, there may be games or things like that. It's a big commitment. And I know most about the sledge because I have a family member that was involved with that program, so at that level. So I know mostly about that training. But I also know, because I'm a wheelchair basketball coach, that our basketball players, a lot of our elite basketball players are actually training now at the Basketball Academy in Toronto, where they're on court 5 days a week and participating in tournaments and things like that throughout the year to get them ready for the Paralympic Games. And that's our men and women wheelchair basketball players. And, you know, in our case, we do have a female that's on our club team. So she still plays with us club-wise, but she's part of that Basketball Academy program as well.
So if you could send any message to the community about the need for inclusion in sport, what would you say?
It's only my opinion, but what I would say is that everybody needs to know that they're not alone. So they need to know that there's other people out there going through similar struggles or going through similar great stuff out there. I mean, we all do it. Every single person on here seeks out people that are kind of going through similar things. So people need to know that that's available. They need to form a social network. But more than that, they need to know that they can have success and therefore feel good about themselves. So I think that there is a need for these kind of programs to be available and to be open to everyone in order for, you know, people to have those successes, those good feelings about themselves, but to also understand they're not alone in the world.
Like, thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Okay.
What a moment, folks. That moment of realization for that child, coming to understand for the very first time, I'm not alone. I don't have to be the only one. I'm not so different from those in society. Moments like that are what I love to see. Because once you go through that door, once you realize that there are support systems, there are others who can understand, and that you can learn from, that you can stand alongside, you grow as a person, not just a person with a disability. You grow as a person. You come to understand not only more about your own condition, more about the world around you, the people, the diversity of it all. Everyone loves to say, oh, we embrace diversity, this, that, and the other. When you see it at a very human level, when you see two people with disabilities recognizing a kindred spirit in each other, understanding that there is a shared strength, that there is an ability to achieve for a person with a disability. when they first realize that, it's a game changer, no pun intended. But it's programs like these that are, sounds to be very grassroots, but making incredible impacts. I maintain, if you impact even one person, if you can show one person that people with disabilities are not just a cause or something to be pitied or something to go out of your way for. If instead, you demonstrate them as people of strength, character, and dignity, that person, their understanding, will never be as it was. And who knows, maybe they'll go on to spread the good word to others. That's what it's all about, folks. Creating a true awareness that people with disabilities are capable, intelligent, and strong. It all depends on how we choose to look at them. I find it's the very grassroots organizations, the ones that have few resources, that want to give the most, because they really have this commitment that says, I've seen how this can affect someone I care about, generally. And now, I want the world to be a better place, not just for him or her, but for all those out there who might be affected. All those who ask the question, am I really alone? Am I really some sort of misfit in society? When you consider thousands of types of disabilities, and the millions of people who deal with it every day with strength, intelligence, and dignity. Those who have found unique and innovative ways to create and to live strong. The answer to the question becomes, no, you are no misfit. You are simply a part of this great tapestry we call life. HandyLink will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
Delta Zetas are some of the most devoted students at the University of Windsor. Our sorority is built upon four pillars: academics, sisterhood, philanthropy, and leadership. We are known as successful women on campus and leaders within our community. Right now, we are looking for amazing women to join our sisterhood. For more information, check out Delta Zeta on Facebook.
Welcome back to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, we heard from Kathy Ludwig from Cruisers Sports. In this segment of our show, we'll get an update from our friend Anna Pileggi about her work at About Face. So tell me a little bit about the latest happenings with About Face.
Well, you know, one of our goals and our visions for About Face is trying to really engage the community more, and not just around needing service, but creating a movement. I'm going to use the term loud and proud to be visible, to be seen. A lot of people tend to come to About Face at a crisis time, either at the birth of a child or when they newly acquire a facial difference. And life's pretty overwhelming at that time. So they'll sort of take what they need and then kind of go away and deal with life. They may touch back with us at other crisis moments or life's new life situations that they think About Face can help with. But we want to be able to retain our community members and get them engaged in creating public awareness, creating a visible community, that we are out there and we are seen and we are heard. You know, I think there has been a lot of progress over the last, many years actually, particularly in the disability community. And now we're starting to see other communities, you know, the LGB group and other groups, autism, that isn't really, not disabilities, but there are differences in some way. And they're starting to be heard in their space. They're starting to make noise, if you will. And I think that building awareness across the board, getting our community engaged to tell their stories, will help, you know, reduce, minimize some of the stigmas and stereotypes and discriminations that people experience. But we have to be present. You know, we have to be visible. We have to be out there to be able to do that. That's one of our longer-term goals for About Face.
So, in terms of the myths you mentioned, how do you go about dispelling that, providing real information versus what people might have as a preconceived notion?
Well, I think that's a really good point. I think because the stereotypes and the stigmas around facial difference are so ingrained in our society, even from a very early stage, you know, look at all the fairy tales and storybooks and movies. You know, whoever is bad or evil looks facially different. They have a green face, they have a hooked nose, they have warts, they have scars, they have whatever. So that goes very, very deep. And a lot of the myths around that is that they're very unhappy people. And so one of the strategies that About Face encourages our community members and people who we work with to do is to not perpetuate those negative stereotypes. You know, go out and do what you love to do. Be present in the community. Have a statement prepared in your mind, in the back of your mind, so that when someone says something, maybe it's a rude comment, and you can respond with confidence and with self-dignity, that is a way of dispelling those myths. If someone says something, maybe it's out of curiosity or inquisition, and that you feel to elaborate and explain, good, there's an educational moment. And I guess it's helping our community members to discern those moments. Here's a moment where whatever I say is not going to make a difference to this person. I don't know this person. I may never interact with this person again. For example, you know, on the subway or at the mall or somewhere out on vacation, that you can turn around and walk away. You could make a comment, but you could walk away. When there's a moment where there is an opportunity to educate in your own community, at the grocery store, at the bank, to be able to help others understand, you know, that I was born this way or that this is just a birthmark, it doesn't affect my ability to live and move in society. Those are teachable moments. Those are moments where we learn to dispel the stereotypes and the stigmas. One of the realities is often, I know we've done a lot of work with parents in this, but, you know, they get angry. And that's understandable. You know, I'm tired of being stared at. I'm tired of comments. I'm tired of whispers. So it's understandable that people will get upset. But when you get upset and lash out, all you've done is perpetuated that myth or that, stereotype of people with facial differences are bad, are not happy, are, you know, not nice people. And you've left both parties feeling upset because it doesn't make you feel good when you tell somebody off. Well, it might at the moment, but I think in retrospect you might look back and say, well, yeah, now I feel bad about what I said, or I feel bad about how I dealt with that situation. So it's looking for those moments to educate. We try to do that with articles as well, looking at Halloween as a, you know, it's a fun international, well, maybe North American, experience. Yet, can we look at ways that we don't demean people, that we don't, encourage those negative stereotypes? Looking at masks and costumes that are fun, that are different, but are not insulting or not hurtful to those with facial differences.
So, has there been any individual moment of teaching that stands out for you as a success?
It wasn't with me directly, but it was through a young family that we'd worked with for many years. And this little girl looked very different. She has a very rare condition. And mom and dad were very determined to keep her doing what young kids do, you know, sports and things. And she's quite limited in the sports arena, can't swim because she has a trach and, you know, hearing aid and things like that. So, you know, some of her opportunities are more limited. And so she was quite young. She was maybe about six or seven years old, and she had joined the local brownies. And the younger girls are called Sparks. So she had joined the Sparks group, and I'd met up with them one day, and I was asking how that was going. And, you know, she looked at me, and she said, well, you know, a lot of the kids are still really shy about me, so I need to give them more time. So I said, so what are you doing to give them more time? And she said, well, I brought in a presentation on About Face. I'm helping them to see I'm involved with this organization. I'm trying to do this. The same young girl, so that was a moment for those kids to get to know her outside of just being facially different. And the same young girl, as a young teen, one of the goals that we do, or one of the programs that we offer at camp, is helping our individual campers set personal goals. And for this young girl, she has no ears, so no external ears, but she really kept that concealed by keeping her hair long and people wouldn't see it. At camp, her goal, this was last year, her goal was to wear her hair in a ponytail every day at camp, to let others see her ears, to let others get comfortable with her ears. And when she came back to school, back to mainstream, she used her hair up in a ponytail to school, and there was some shock, and people were like, I didn't know. And she said, well, you know, this is who I am, trying to reveal who they are. And there was a fashion show going on at the school. So she went in, and she said, I'd like to register to be a model on the fashion show. And everyone was like, oh, are you sure? Are you sure? And she said, yes, this is a moment for me to shine. So she did it and got all kinds of accolades, and people recognized her as the person that she is. So these moments aren't big aha moments all the time, but they're subtle things that happen over time. But it plays on two sides. It plays on the community to be exposed to people with differences, and it plays with the person to be able to put themselves out there and be open to sharing and open to being seen by the public.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Sure.
As it should be, folks. Absolutely as it should be. For this young woman's story, starting off as a small child, trying to find her place in the world, just by letting her friends know that she is a person as unique and diverse and capable as any other in society. Then going on to that fashion show makes a very bold statement. And it's not necessarily about inspiring others. It can be about saying to the world, I'm here. I'm human. Accept me as I am. For life is a beautiful thing. And the truth is, the more you look at the diversity of a person, the more you see that they are someone with a job and education, brothers, sisters, children, what have you, the more you recognize that they are not ruled by one little thing, one difference. You can't create the impossible standard, folks. If it's okay to discriminate against someone who doesn't have ears, it's okay to discriminate against somebody based on eye color, skin color, sexual orientation. It's a backslide to where humanity need not go. The truth is, it is not our place to judge one another. No one gets through life entirely on their own. It is a matter of building each other up, recognizing each other's strengths, and yes, even as Anna described, sharing in each other's victories. Sharing in those beautiful moments when the world goes from its infancy to a place where they understand, where they can say, because this person looks a little different, does not mean that she should be excluded, that she shouldn't be a part of the community. many people with disabilities do in one form or another face this sort of teasing, whether it be openly or very indirectly. I myself experienced that some growing up. And to anyone out there with a disability who's listening and needs that little bit of encouragement, I say to you, be who you are. In 20 years, you're still going to be a strong, capable person. But hopefully, in that time, those who didn't understand learned, grew, became something better. Fact is, we don't need more scars than what disability has given. To those who would say, you're not equal because you move a little differently, or you learn a little differently, you think a little differently, who put you in charge of making that decision? Who gave anyone that authority to say, because this is a little different about you, or that's a little different about you, that we're not going to include you in our little clique? Fact is, it is not about giving an unfair advantage to people with disabilities. Most of us are simply looking for equality, respect for who we are and what we can contribute to the community. And I maintain, no matter how the disability displays itself, there is no person out there who can't contribute. Even if it's something as small as giving a smile, brightening somebody's day. Don't underestimate that sort of contribution. Don't say to yourself, I'm just one person with a disability. My talents don't matter. This young woman took it upon herself and said, I'm someone who's a little different. But I want people to see beyond the surface. I want them to see that I am more than this. And that message has sent itself very clearly, I think. We must always push forward in our understanding of all types of disabilities, in all types of what makes a person unique. We must never rest on our laurels and say, this policy's enough, or people aren't actually being discriminated against at work. No. Having policies, legal protections, that sort of thing, that's fine, that's good. Monitor it. Check in once in a while. Say, is all that we can do for you, are all your needs being met? It's not a difficult thing. Sometimes you have to ask the question before you get an answer. For a person with a disability, if they want to fit in that badly, sometimes they will push aside their own needs. They will say, this is affecting me. This sort of discrimination, this sort of teasing is affecting me, but I'm not going to talk about it for fear that it's getting worse. You can't leave it like that, folks. Sometimes it's a matter of the other guy asking, do you need anything? But a person with a disability must also know how to assert themselves. They must know how to say, I need some help, or I want people to look at this a little differently. So it is a balancing act. It's a balance within the community. One person building another up, supporting another. Sounds to me like anyone else in society, disability or not, it is everyone's responsibility in a community to be answerable to everyone else, to build each other up, to get through the hard times, to enjoy the good ones, but most of all, to include our fellow human beings. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you we're all equal. So get on out there and have yourselves a good one. Something tells me you've earned it, folks, and we'll see you next week.